thanks to our sponsor, Seminary Now. Seminary Now is an amazing online streaming platform where you can get video resources to help you grow in your faith, from deep theological studies to lessons in social justice and spiritual integration. SeminaryNow.com/cuss and put in cuss30 for a discount for MLA listeners.
You're listening to Managing Leadership Anxiety, Yours and Theirs, a podcast offered in partnership with Missio Alliance. Each episode, we discuss internal and relational pressures, how they block effective leadership, and how we can move through them to a greater health. And now your host, Steve Cuss.
Friends, when Lisa and I moved to Colorado in 2005, some of the people we first met became some of our all-time favorite people, Brian and Julie Mavis. Brian and Julie at the time were working at a local church north of us, a larger church, and they were doing incredibly innovative work in community partnerships to help people on the margins of society. I'm talking specifically in the realm of foster care. Brian and Julie themselves were foster parents, and then Julie quickly moved into working for the local county. And then out of that early experience, they formed this national organization called America's Kids Belong, which is helping kids that are eligible for adoption become adopted. All of these kids in the foster system that want a mom and a dad, want a family, Brian and Julie worked tirelessly with their team to help make that happen. Out of that first nonprofit, America's Kids Belong, Julie Mavis formed a second nonprofit, the Dream Makers Project, when she saw what it was like for kids aging out of foster care facing a world alone. Many of you know Brian has been on this podcast to talk about his life and about America's Kids Belong. And it's just a great privilege on this episode to be joined by Julie Mavis, the founder of the Dreammakers Project, as well as one of her co-workers, Annika Merrick Bada. I interviewed Julie and Annika together. Julie is the founder. Annika as not just a staff member of Dreammakers, but also as a former foster kid herself who aged out of the system. This was a really poignant interview for me to hear what it was like for someone to see a need and build an organization to start to meet it. That's Julie's story, and it's incredible. But also Annika's story as somebody who grew up in that system, the challenges she faced, the meaning she made out of it, and just what she's doing today. This was an incredible interview. I think you're going to love it. I began by asking Julie what Dreammakers is all about and why she started it. Here we go.
Dreammakers connects the community to kids who have aged out of foster care with all of their needs. So it's just the heart of myself and the organization to really connect with as many kids as we can that are alone in this world without families. And as they're struggling to be independent and get their careers going and be self-sufficient, they have a lot of different needs that a lot of times parents would fulfill, whether it's a laptop or giving them scrubs if they're going to be a nurse, or if they're needing food during, you know, times where, you know, food is very expensive right now. We definitely help. We try to focus on a lot of the career things, just helping them be independent. But sometimes the kids just need a bed or bedding for the bed that they do have. Just basic needs. Sometimes it's clothing and simple things that we gather their needs and then put it on the website and pray that people will come forward and fulfill their dream.
So one aspect of Dreammakers then is functionally it's sort of a matchmaking site between the needs of these kids aging out and the resources of people?
Exactly. Exactly. Okay. Yep. And just helping people see that they don't need to go to another country to care for kids without families in an orphanage, but you could actually care for kids right here in the United States that are without families and just caring for the fatherless and being able to present those needs to people.
Okay. So I would imagine most people, when they think about kids in need, they wouldn't automatically think about kids that are aging out of foster care. They're 18 years of age. But Annika, I wonder if you would just give us a sense of what kinds of challenges are kids facing once they turn 18 and they no longer have the system supporting them. What is that like for them?
So for many people, the age of 18 isn't an age where you feel like you can independently be on your own. But for those of us who were in the foster care system, we don't have another option. And so at 18, many of us are, you know, put on to the street, or, you know, we are left with no resources, and we face challenges such as even just basic, how do I even fill out a form to look for a new apartment, let alone where the funds going to come from to provide for that? How am I going to get my permit? How am I going to seek out opportunities for higher education? And it, you know, that's like, it's such a broad spectrum, because you struggle with daily things, as in how do I even emotionally cope and how do I move past my trauma to even know what I'm going to do today, versus when I go to the grocery store, if I even have money, what kind of things should I buy? How can I be healthy? How do I even know how to cook a meal? And so there's so many life skills that we are not taught, that many children or youth who are raised in homes that have loving parents, these are just things that are given that they teach their kids. And so it's struggling from the top to the bottom of all skill levels, and just truly lacking even having community or people to ask questions to makes such a big difference, and really feels like it sets us back when we're comparing ourselves to our peers.
Yeah. I used to do work in Las Vegas among people who I would just say they were in chronic ongoing systemic poverty. And a lot of them would come in off the street to our church for help. And they were these amazing people. And together we kind of came up to the conclusion, I mean, I'm a person of means, they needed things. But together we realized you either pay with money or you pay with hassle, but either way you pay. And one of the biggest challenges for people in systemic poverty was the bureaucracy of navigating the system. Mm-hmm. Is that some of what you're talking about too, Annika? Is just how do you even begin as an 18-year-old to know what resources are out there and how to get them? And
1,000%. And even in my own case, so I was in foster care system and aged out. And then, you know, I have heard people say now that I've been out of the system, like, oh yeah, there are so many resources set up for youth who are aging out. There's like housing, there's vouchers, all this stuff. Well, I had never had one person tell me, out of all the caseworkers I had, there were so many things that I was never told about until I was already too old. And so, sure, there maybe are some systems that are set up, but letting us know and the advocacy of telling these youth, there's such a big, just a big gap, because so many of my friends are in the same boat where sometimes I'll find out about something and say, oh, I met, you know, a 20-year-old who, like, they shared that they're going to try to get help with blank and blank. And I'd ask some of my friends and they're like, oh, never heard of that. And like, could have used that. That could have saved my life. And so there is such a big lack of communication because there are so many youth who are aging out. And so even if there are resources out there, the reality that we would be given them or told about them is just, I feel like, zero to none.
Yeah. So Annika, you work for Dreammakers, but obviously this is, you just kind of alluded to it, this is extremely personal for you. I wonder if you might take us back to that first day when you turned 18, that moment you became supposedly a legal adult. What was going on in your head?
I think the biggest thing for me was wondering what I was going to do, like what the next day would look like. I'm really grateful that I was in a foster home where I knew they weren't going to kick me out the next day, which many youth that I've met, that's not the reality. The reality is they're going to wake up with their bags packed for them. And so I was grateful that I didn't have to, like, I wasn't going to be homeless that day. But as far as what my future looked like, it's like I didn't know how much longer I would have in that home. I wasn't sure. Yeah, what the future looked like. I knew that the support from the system was going to be ending. And in that case, I chose to sign myself up for extended foster care. But even with that, I did it to get support. But even with that, in order to even be a part of those services, I had to get transportation to the meetings. And I ended up having to sign myself out early because I was an 18-year-old who didn't have money, who didn't have car, and I couldn't ask people for rides to go meet with my caseworker. And so there are a lot of restrictions set up in the system that really limit the youth who can access the services that are there. So for me, I could access help for school if I was able to go to a monthly meeting, but I didn't have transportation to get to the meeting. And so there are a lot of balls that are being dropped for youth because this is a very common problem right now even.
Yeah. Annika, do you mind? It's impolite for a man to ask a woman how old she is, but do you mind if I ask you how old you are now?
Yeah, I just turned 31 last week.
Okay, so 18 to 31, about what age were you when you started to get that feeling of, hey, I can do this. I kind of know how to navigate and things are going to be okay. How old would that have been?
I mean, sometimes I still feel like I'm sure. Figuring things out for sure, but I would say if I had to pick a number, maybe like 26, 27. Okay, I mean, it took many years, as you can tell.
I really appreciate that. Like, I've got a 22-year-old son and a 20-year-old son. Obviously, I've got a 16-year-old daughter who's still at home. I just think about being raised in a family with a mom and dad, my boys have, how much of our help they profoundly need at 22 and 20, which to me is their dad feels completely normal. Like when they reach out for help, I'm not like, figure it out on your own. I'm thrilled to guide them in money management. Mm-hmm. And how do you find your first place? It's just hard to imagine, Annika, what it must be like to navigate a world without much of that.
Right.
Okay. So, Julie, this is also profoundly personal for you as mm-hmm. well. You've been in the foster care movement for how long now?
Gosh. Oh, my goodness. With the nonprofit world, over 10 years, mm-hmm. but it goes way back to our girls are grown now and married and having kids, and they were in grade school when we started doing foster care.
Yeah, for you and Brian, your husband, it was really a family ministry. You would take in babies together and your girls would stay up with those kids themselves. Tell us about those early times.
Yeah, that was a beautiful season for sure. We just really wanted to help kids who had nowhere to go and opened up our home and had two little girls that were they've always been incredibly kind and helpful and compassionate. And so we took in kids always one at a time, though. That was all I had capacity for, because I still wanted to help out in the kids' school and, you know, go to their soccer games and do everything. Young mom, I still wanted to not drop the ball on my own girls. We did foster care one kid at a time and loved taking them in. It was always heartbreaking having them come because you really saw where they were coming from, whether they brought just a trash bag with a caseworker and here's their goods, here it is. And the kids were always, always crying. They just wanted to be with their mom or with their dad, depending on who they were with, and or going to the hospital, picking up babies that were had drugs in their system and trying to be weaned off of those. Never was there a case that wasn't heart-wrenching. But we loved taking them in and just loving on them. But it was always, always excruciating when they left. Even after the first time, I think I even said, I'm never doing this again.
Yeah.
Like, this cannot be good for my girls. Like, I'll get over it. Brian will get over it. But too painful for my girls. I don't think this is healthy. They'll be in therapy the rest of their lives, you know.
Yeah.
But they absolutely loved it. And they were the ones to say, let's do it again. Yeah. Let's do it again. And now here, so many years later, my oldest daughter, she is a foster mom, took in lots of kids, adopted three of them. And my youngest, pregnant with her first, does have an interest in foster care later on. So who knew? Didn't see that coming.
And both of your girls, not just opening their own families, but they spend their vocation.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Both of them. This is just their passion and they know it so well just from being little girls and seeing brokenness at a young age and just having a heart for people who are out there just without families. It's for all of us. We can't fathom it.
One of the things I think for those of us who have not had direct experience with foster care, I don't think we think about food insecurity much. Mm. Annika, I wonder if you might start by helping educate us on what's it like for a foster kid with food insecurity.
Yeah, so, I mean, children and youth enter the foster care system due to no fault of their own, and every circumstance that we come from is so different. I was in a home where definitely, like, there was food, but it was not accessible to me whenever I needed it or wanted it. So basically, it felt like there wasn't food because it was not, when I was hungry, I could just go grab it. And so how that affected me, even when I went into a foster home that did have a pantry, which that was like a new thing for me in general. I was like, wow, you guys can just, like, because there was two little kids in the house. I was like, you guys can just grab food whenever you're hungry. It took me, I would say, at least half a year before I grabbed the first thing from that pantry. I remember so many nights. I mean, I was starving in a home that had food readily available. But because of what I'd come from, I was terrified of touching their food. Sometimes at night, I would still sneak their food. I would put it under my bed. And I was a teenager at that point. But my relationship surrounding food, and so many of my friends who also aged out, their relationship surrounding food was so abnormal compared to your average kid, because for us, for many of us, it was used as like a token of a reward. It was a prized possession where, like, you see food in the pantry and you don't want to touch it because if you eat it, it's going to be gone and not replaceable. It's just something that is not like how most people see food nowadays. It was portrayed as a, I would say, something that we never took for granted type of thing.
Yeah, and Julie, you've known Annika for a while, but even hearing that, like, that's really hard to hear. What's going on in you right now?
Yeah, she's shared so much of her story, but I've never heard that. And just knowing as a foster mom, seeing that firsthand, but not knowing that happened to her rips my heart out.
Yeah. Yeah, so then you and Brian, after being foster parents for years, by the way, Julie, you know, one of my recreational habits is when someone's uncomfortable, just keep asking them questions.
Right.
But you guys decided you needed to go upstream, not just open your home, but start looking at policy. You started working for the county. You and Brian then founded Colorado Kids Belong and then America's Kids Belong. For those unfamiliar, it's something your husband is still working a lot in, helping kids who are eligible in foster care to be adopted. But then somewhere along the way, you realized that there was another avenue, and that's where Dreammakers came along. Tell us how you first started to think about launching another nonprofit.
Yeah. Part of my role, I had created videos of kids who were waiting for adoption and was really trying to make that program successful and get that into other states, and was actually getting to meet a lot of the kids that were available for adoption. And there was one that I had met that really connected with, and his name was DeAndre, and just really just felt for him, you know, and he was a senior. He was about to graduate, and we usually place around 50% of the kids that we video. So I knew his chances were getting slim at 18 and being male. So anyway, he did graduate. But he, at the time when we were doing his video, he had mentioned he didn't even have anybody. He couldn't even afford to do senior pictures. And I'm like, oh my gosh, if I can't get this kid a home, at least I could, like, find somebody to do senior portraits for him. Yeah. So navigated that. And then it was not even a year later, I had circled back with his caseworker that I had met and just asked, how's DeAndre? How's he doing? And she said, we found out he's actually homeless. And it got me, and just thought, oh my gosh, it just, so sad to think that, so quickly there's just not enough resources out there. There's no family to help guide or to say, hey, just come home for another month until you can get your feet on the ground. So the idea came from that of, gosh, if I couldn't get these kids a home, at least we could find people in the community to support them with the needs as they turn 18 and are just truly alone and trying to navigate life by themselves.
Mm. I think, you know, there's a lot of good work being done nowadays, even inside the church, where we're starting to realize that charity is not helpful, but really tackling systemic poverty is helpful. And even in the work our church has done, I think we were slow to realize, because we always started with kids when they were really small, preschool, elementary age, even globally in our global work. And then we just kept realizing that 18 to 27 year old range is really critical if you're going to help people break a cycle. And so, Annika, I wonder if you would tell us, what do you see in kids that age out of foster care? What are some of if you want to quote statistics, great, but like experience with prison, homelessness, things like that. What are you seeing in that age group?
Yeah, I mean, I really feel like the numbers speak for themselves in that case. 50% of the homeless population has spent time in the foster care system. 60% of sex trafficking victims have also spent time in the system. And so it's impossible to say that there isn't a direct correlation, because also when you look at young people who are aging out, who are left without resources, left without community, left without a place to belong, where are they going to go look for it? And so that's why there's so many youth who end up in such dangerous situations, who are engaged in high risk activities, because I think at the end of the day, we're all just trying to survive. And when you're trying to survive alone, you will take any option possible. You're not going to weigh out the risk. And for so many youth who age out, we're not even taught how to problem solve or how to think logically or to weigh out like risk versus reward. And so a number of youth who age out who do end up in prison or incarcerated or addicted or dealing with PTSD, I mean, the rates are so, so much higher than the average population. And for me, it takes no time for me to realize why that is the case. It's just so obvious to me.
Yeah. Okay. So we're releasing this episode, you know, coming up on the Christmas season. And a lot of people really do want to make a difference at Christmas. Mm. And so one of the things that they can do is they can support Dream Makers in very tangible ways, Julie. Mm. What can a listener do to make a difference in the life of a kid who's aged out?
Yeah, right now we are asking for $15 just for a basic meal for Thanksgiving. So we have kids, we do something specifically in Colorado, but we also serve kids in 38 different states now. And so we are raising money for food for kids for Thanksgiving. We're also going to be putting on 100 different Christmas wishes from kids with their actual photo, their story, real kids, real wishes, and wanting to support them. Normally we work with, you know, more of a, it's rent, it's car repairs, it's, you know, not as fun things, and they don't get fun things. And just as a parent wants to support the serious things, we also want to just have our kids have fun and feel special and loved and seen. And so we're going to do that this year. So we'll have lots of Christmas gifts on the site. So.
Okay. So we'll have the link to the site in the show notes, Dream Makers Project.
Yep.
People can go on and they can donate money and it'll directly go to the wish of one of these young adults.
Yep. They also at the same time can actually write scriptures, prayers, encouraging notes on the gift, and those always get back to the kids. And the kids read it, and so many times they say, I loved the whatever they got, but I had no idea people cared. I had no idea that just strangers out there, you know, would remember me and see my need and help.
Yeah, it really does make a difference, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
You've never met one of these people, but you can simply write a note of kindness, which for many of them, they're starved for.
Yes.
Okay. Yep. Okay. Annika, as you listen to this, as you listen to our podcast listeners looking to make a difference, what comes to mind for you on tangibly the difference they make with Dream Makers?
I always just think back to even my own story and the need I had for a laptop, because I was just struggling to make ends meet. And I was working part-time at a church doing graphic design on a computer, and I would stay I mean, late as I could until the janitors were closing up to use their computer to try to make graphics for clients. And coming across DreamMakers, I remember my Google search was resources for aged out youth. And I did not think that was going to be a thing. And so when DreamMakers popped up, I filled out the form and I thought to myself, well, this is basically me tossing a penny into a wishing well, and it's okay if it doesn't come true, and I'm not even going to count on it because, you know, it's probably not a real thing. And then actually having a laptop sent to me with such a kind note, and of course I needed the practical thing of a laptop. It truly had changed my life because I was able to do what I'm doing now, like doing web design and graphic design and all that. But more than that, it was a catalyst of me even starting to talk about foster care, because at that point I was silenced into shame. And yeah, having someone fulfill my dream, it truly showed me, oh, even if it's just this one family, because it was a family fulfilled it, even if they're the only people who are out there who are impacted by my story and who care, like, I think it's worth starting to open my mouth to share so that it can help maybe other people. And so I think for any of the listeners who are maybe questioning, like, would it even matter for me to make a difference? Like, do not underestimate what your words and your kindness and generosity can do, because there are so many youth who don't think that there is even one caring adult out there. And your words could truly, like, change how they think about themselves and how they think about their own story.
Yeah. Annika, as I was listening to you, you made this interesting phrase. I was wondering if you might give us a little more on it when you said I was silenced into shame. What happened there?
Yeah, I mean, for, I would say, a large majority of us in the population of people who've experienced foster care, society has such a stereotype, like, kids in foster care are bad. Those kids did something and that's why they're in foster care, which is a complete opposite, because we end up in the system due to no fault of our own. I mean, we're truly living out the consequences of, you know, our biological parents' actions. And so I didn't know that back then, but I felt so ashamed about being in foster care. It's really, really embarrassing being in high school and having your caseworker come and grab you from your classroom, having to do lunch with them. Of course, there are people who mean well, but it's very obvious to all your peers and all your classmates that you're different. And so I did not ever want to share about being in foster care, because I thought if I could just erase that part of my story, then I could at least pretend that I, like, was a normal kid.
Yeah, thank you very much for sharing that. Annika and Julie, I'm always intrigued. Oftentimes I have someone on the show who is doing incredibly intense work like you guys are doing. Like, this is really intense. And the need is overwhelming. Mm-hmm. I'm curious how each of you, Julie, we might start with you,
Sure. How
each of you take care of yourselves. Mm-hmm. Because it's been my experience with people who do intense work where the need is overwhelming, that the temptation can just always be to go, 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 go. Mm-hmm. What do each of you do to stay well so you can stay in it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm definitely doing better this time around with DreamMakers versus when I was with AKB. It was just so overwhelming with the need and what we were doing. But through the years, I'm learning. I think one of the ways, I'll do yoga, make sure I do exercise, definitely very calming. I have learned a practice of silence that was a game changer through me, Ruth Haley Barton.
Yeah. Read
her books.
You go visit a local monastery, don't you?
Yes.
Where do you go?
It's up in, it's the Walburga, St.
Walburga.
Yes.
Where they chant Gregorian chant. I've been there.
Yes. Life-changing for me.
I've been chastised by a nun there.
Really?
Yeah, it was
one of my favorite memories. Gosh. Yeah. Wow. So yeah, that was a game changer. I've been going there for 5 years, except during COVID, and just... yeah, life-changing to be able to sit in silence before God and not go, 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 and not even just pray, but just sit in his presence. And that was, huge for me. So grateful to her to teach me that skill and practice, I guess that would be a better word. And I think just life too. I have 4 grandbabies now. So
young grandbabies.
Little,
too.
Yes, all under the age of 5 and another one on the way. And so that's just a natural, like, I want to be with my grandbabies. Like, so
all
just
the more importance to do yoga to stay limber right, for those kids too. Right. Holy smokes. Yeah. I've been to St. Walburgers. I've not been since COVID, so I don't know if they still do this, but they used to chant Gregorian 7 times a day. Has that been your experience
yes.
too?
Yes.
And they also have a herd of cattle and an orchard. And I remember pulling the Mother Superior aside, and I said to her, with all of this worship, how do you have time to ever work?
Mm.
And she looked at me very sternly and she said, worship is our work. And so I was like, oh, I've been corrected by a Catholic nun. I feel like, because I've been a Protestant my whole life,
yeah.
I really enjoyed that experience.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, Annika, how about you? What do you do to take care of yourself to make sure that you're well?
I think, of course, first and foremost for me, just like being in the presence of God, being in worship, reading the word, because for me, if I'm not filled, I know I can't pour out to others. And then also just being, you know, knowing the heart of God, knowing that he cares more for any of the youth than we ever could is always such a good reminder. And so that's also, you know, the reason why I'm still alive nowadays. So I always just think, like, I want to be with the one who saved me and who can save all these other youth. And then outside of that, for sure, I love being with people. So just being with loved ones, and no matter what we're doing, that's my favorite thing. Just, you know, redeeming time, letting God restore memories and make new ones has been super healing. So I love, like, going thrifting or, like, learning to cook or trying new restaurants. Just the things that are simple pleasures, but I love doing all of that.
Folks, I went to seminary in the 1990s, and in many ways it formed and changed my life in ways that I'm still benefiting from today. One of the most powerful things for me was the way it helped me navigate scripture and make sense of it and get meaning out of it, but also the way it massively expanded my worldview. It's like it gave me more tools in my faith tool belt. What's amazing now in the 2000s, in the 21st century, is you don't have to go to seminary. There's an online streaming platform called Seminary Now, and some of those scholars that I read in books are now available to you and I in these amazing video courses. You can go to seminarynow.com/cuss and put in CUSS30 for a special Managing Leadership Anxiety discount. Okay, ladies, we've talked about some things that are really serious. We'll be putting a link in the show notes, and before the end of the episode, I'll just be mentioning the website, really encouraging listeners to log on, take a look, and make a difference. I'm thrilled to say that Dreammakers is coming on as one of our sponsors for the podcast. So I'll be chatting about them in each episode leading up to mid-December when we wrap up. However, before we end, each of you must endure the gauntlet of anxiety questions. Fewer women have cowered in the face of these questions. So what I'll do is I'll just ask 3 or 4 questions. And Julie, why don't we always start with you,
okay,
since you're the founder. And then Annika will have you. Julie, here's question number 1. How do you know when you're not well?
Ooh, I do not sleep well. That's a giveaway right there. I have a tendency to start being a workaholic. Like, I just go, go, go. And then I catch myself now. And like, you're going there. You're going to a bad place. Do not do that. I'll get headaches if I get really stressed. My back will go out. So a lot of just my body tells me, like, you are not well, you better back off.
Okay. So, and then the sleeping well, is that related to a spinning mind for you?
For sure.
Okay, that's
for
one of the signs.
For sure.
Okay.
Yep. But I have definitely figured that one out. Don't do that anymore.
All right. Annika, how about you? How do you know when you're not well?
I would say for me, it's largely would be in my thought life. Like, if I have old thoughts, haunting thoughts, like traumatic feelings from the past that I've worked through, if those start to come up, or if I start to think about things that I don't want to, or if I feel like back, you know, years ago when I was doing life alone, if I start feeling like super lonely and like that I'm just struggling through life and I have nobody, because that is the opposite now in my reality. I have lots of caring people, which I'm so grateful for. But when those old lies start to feel real again, that's when I know I'm not doing well, because I'm not looking at what I presently have.
Amazing answers. Okay. We all have people in our life that are just, frankly, harder to love than others. Like, the reason we love them is Jesus says you have to. Otherwise, we'd prefer to ignore them. Julie, first for you, what types of people or what behaviors tend to trigger you the most?
For sure, unhealthy eights on the Enneagram.
Okay. All right. So for those who may not be familiar with an unhealthy eight, what does that look like?
They're just so... I don't know if the word is forceful or just aggressive.
Okay.
Just kind of bulldoze their way through. Okay. And I just shrink down so much that I'm just not even myself. And I get so intimidated, and it just brings out the worst in me. And yeah, that has been a pattern through the years that I need to get help with.
Okay. So very aggressive people tend to make you get smaller,
kind
of either a turtle in your shell kind of situation.
Yes.
All right. When you're at your best and you're able to stay connected to them, what are you doing inside to get past that initial turtle reaction? Maybe there's never been a time, but has there been a time where you're like, okay, I've gotten smaller, now I'm going to get past that and actually work on connecting with that person?
I think I still need help to learn that tool, be honest. I don't think I know it. I know, you know, being self-aware doesn't help all your problems. I'm at that point, though, of like, I know that's what I do, but I don't know how to navigate that.
What's the next thing? Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Annika, how about for you? What kind of personality traits or behaviors in another person really trigger you?
I would say people who are inconsistent, people who say one thing but don't follow through. Because just because of my past and having so many changes and having so many empty, unfulfilled like promises and stuff like that, that's very triggering for me. It can make me feel like this person is unsafe or unreliable. And then another thing I think would be people, of course no one's perfect, but like people who are not open to, I don't know, I guess like healthy correction. So like if people are not open to feedback and then unwilling to change behavior when it's like unsafe or unkind or whatnot, that's really hard for me because it makes it feel like, I don't know, I think you feel as a friend like very silenced if you are not listened to or your feedback is not received or even like accepted type of thing. And so, yeah, I would say like those two personality types would be the hardest for me.
Yeah. And then same question for you, Annika. Do you have a practice that helps you get past that initial irritation to be able to connect to those people?
It probably sounds cheesy, but really it's the only thing I can think of. Like, I think I just always try my hardest to like practice grace and empathy, because I definitely, both those things, I'm sure I acted like that before, and maybe even sometimes still. And I think I always just think back to how I was before I was able to do counseling and before I was able to really heal because of loving people. And so I just really focus on that and think, you know, I needed love at those points, and I did have people who loved me and they helped me to get to where I am now. So I want to, as best I can with boundaries, do that for people who are irritating to me.
Yeah, so good. Okay. All right, we're halfway through the gauntlet. So far, so good. Two more questions to go. Julie, as you look at your leadership, where do you keep running into yourself? I think all of us have one or two traits where we're like, man, if I could just get past that same trait.
Gosh, I have a lot of them.
Yeah, me too. Me too. And just choose one or two.
Yeah, first one is just the whole fear of public speaking and being on podcasts, all of that.
This is intimidating, right?
It's very hard for me. I love creating things that shine light on kids without families, but as soon as that spotlight turns around on me, it creates a lot of anxiety. Yeah. I just am not comfortable with it, don't enjoy it. And that's just something I, year after year, I'm like, when will this end? Yeah. It's part of my job. You would think I would figure it out, but that's a real challenge for sure.
Yeah, before we hit record, because we're recording at my house, and my wife Lisa, who's a friend of yours, was just saying to you what a powerful speaker you are. We've been to your fundraisers and things. It's tricky, isn't it, when you're good at something that costs you a lot? Is that what it feels like? Or you're like, I don't think I'm good at it.
I don't think I'm good at it. Yeah. Yeah. I know my husband, he just so talented with public speaking. My daughters are good at it.
Brian is probably one of the finest communicators I know. You've got an unfair situation
there. So yeah, maybe that is. I always compare myself to him, like, oh, if I could just do that. But even my girls are great speakers. So yeah, just something, yeah, I need to figure out.
Need to relax into, yeah. Annika, how about you? What's a trait in yourself you're like, man, I wish I would stop running into myself over and over again?
I would say the hardest thing for me that has just been, I don't know if it's something that people can learn or whatnot, but being like, I would say anything like administrative focused is hard for me. Like I love that I wear a lot of hats at Dreammaker, because I actually like being able to switch. Like, am I working on this graphic? Okay, now I'm going to start working on this. Like, for my mind, it's very stimulating. Like, I can get stuff done because it feels like exciting. And I think it's partly personality type, but it's like, oh, I love working on all these different things. But if it were to be like a very like laid out list, for me that would be a lot harder. And so sometimes I'm like, okay, I need to make a list for today, but it's just so hard for me to like naturally do that. But luckily it works with what I'm doing, so I've been able to get by.
Yeah, actually I'll play on this question too. I very rarely answer my own gauntlet questions, but if this helps our listeners, I've learned about myself that if I have less than 3 or 4 projects, I get lazy. Mm-hmm. It's not enough to get me going. Mm-hmm. And if I have more than 6 or 8 projects, I get paralyzed. Mm. And so right now I feel like I'm really inefficient with my time. And I know this about myself, but I can't seem to get into a habit or a rhythm. So like, I've been doing this work now 2 years full time, well, not quite 2 years. When I was a local lead pastor, I had a very steady schedule, and I still 2 years in can't get a schedule. Because sometimes I travel, like last night I got home from a trip, and so then I wake up this morning and I've got a book deadline, and you'd think it'd be easy to sit down and read the book, send in my edits, and I just kind of sat there and drank my coffee and watched YouTube videos. So that's something I'm working on. And this morning I was like, it's time I got a time management coach. Like, it's been long enough now, two years. And I'm still just sitting and spinning. So that would be mine. I'm going to call an audible and actually add a question, because I think this could really help our listeners. And you guys are bringing so much insight. I think in our faith in Jesus, we believe things about Jesus that we struggle to experience. So for years, I believed in God's love, but I didn't personally experience it. As a preacher, I proclaimed it to others, but I really struggled to encounter it for myself. Is there something you believe about God? So it could be God's love or peace, or sometimes it might be God's presence. Is there something you believe that you don't experience from God? I believe God's with me, but actually when I think about it, I don't sense that God's with me very much. That would be maybe a gap between my belief and experience.
Yeah. I think for me, it would probably be being a pastor's kid. My dad was a pastor. My grandfather was a president of Ozark Christian College. There was just a lot of, I think, pressure to like either be perfect, pretend to be perfect, not to make mistakes. And also that theme of just what are people thinking about us was kind of something that I got in my head. And I think now that's probably something maybe with my relationship with God, is that I need to be perfect. And I struggle with shame, things that I have done bad in my life. And so I think that's something where it's like, I know in my heart, it's all about forgiveness and grace, but that's something that I struggle with.
Yeah, a common struggle. Yeah, thanks, Julie. Yeah. Annika, how about you? And by the way, I should have mentioned, you can pass on any of these questions.
Oh, I was like, I'm happy to answer. I think I would say maybe, I do know and I do experience like God's love and his acceptance of me. And I think that something that I did deal with, and maybe at times too, just being human and with the experience I have, is knowing that he accepts me and fully loves me just as I am. And I think that coming from a home where love was not given at all to me, and where I tried to people please to survive or to try to earn love that was still never given to me, it was hard when I brought that into the context of God and my relationship with him, because I heard so many people and everyone, you know, say to me like, no, God loves you just as you are. But it took a long time for me to get it out of my head and into my heart to truly, truly believe that. So it's like now reminding myself like, okay, I don't have to like earn it. I don't have to strive or perform. He loves me just as I am. And I think that's also like one of the most beautiful parts about knowing God is like, wow, you're the first person who's ever, who I ever can just be myself, and I don't have to do what I did as a kid to try to earn a love that isn't given. It's like you're already freely giving it to me.
You're sitting here like kind of a proud mom, Julie, as you're hearing Annika.
She's amazing. Such a gem.
Yeah. Okay, final question. When in your life lately have you felt most fully and completely loved?
I would easily say on Sundays, church and our family dinners. Church, feeling loved by God, and we always do a family dinner on Sundays with the kids, the grandkids. Brian's folks are there, and we just eat a meal together and share. And, you know, when I first open the door and the grandkids come in, Mimi, you know, and just being surrounded by people that I just absolutely love. And even my son-in-law is like, I would have just handpicked them. They are incredible human beings, yeah. And I just have so much to be grateful for.
Amazing. Annika, how about you? When in your life lately have you felt most fully and completely loved?
I would say even just recent as last week for my birthday, just getting to be with so many loved ones and just have that time. And I mean, I think that I just always think back to how many birthdays I didn't spend doing anything, and like being alone and just not even being excited to be alive type of a thing. And now how different that is, like always knowing that I have loved ones to be with. I have a reason to be so grateful for life. So yeah, just last week, I would say.
Julie and Annika, thanks so much for joining me on the Managing Leadership Anxiety podcast. My listeners know that we are moving into seeking sponsorship for the show, but I do just want to point out that when Lisa and I made the decision to go from full-time lead pastoring to this work, our dream was to be able to adopt an organization that we just wanted to help. Mm-hmm. We wanted to focus on one national or local in the United States and then one global. And so we're sponsoring Dreammakers would know that it's not about financial benefit. It's just that we love what you guys do. So I want my listeners to know this really matters to Lisa and I, that you guys might take time to go on the website, dreammakersproject.org. We will have a link in the show notes, but for those of you who just listen, dreammakersproject.org, please just take time. It doesn't make any difference to the MLA show or to my wife and I, other than how grateful we would be that you would take seriously the needs of kids aging out of foster care. So you'll be hearing more about them in the show as we continue. Julie, thank you so much. Annika, thanks so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
For more resources, visit stevecusswords.com or missyoualliance.org.